Pepsi Prebiotic Cola in original and cherry vanilla. That Pepsi taste you love with no artificial sweeteners, only 30 calories, just 5 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of prebiotic fiber. That great Pepsi taste with even more to love. Pepsi Prebiotic Cola. Unbelievably Pepsi.
Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the latest episode of The Shameless Plug, the show in which I sit down every month with the editor of Empire, Nick Desimlian, and we chat about what is inside the brand new issue of Empire. And this month, this is the way, for on the cover is the Mandalorian and his little pal, Grogu. It's the Mandalorian and Grogu, folks. It's exciting, isn't it, Nick? Hello.
Hey, Chris. I'm clad all in Beskar for this podcast.
The finest. Only the finest Beskar.
Yeah. I don't know why I bothered, because no one can see me, but it took a long time.
I would like to see the Navy.
But yes, you are correct. This is the Mandalorian and Grogu issue. We have had Mando and Grogu on the cover a few times, but this is the first time we've ever shot them. In fact, this
you
is
You shot
the,
them?
Well...
Did they shoot first? You shoot first? McClunky.
We went to Los Angeles, and we found them busy at work finishing their movie. And yes. This is actually the first time in Empire history that we have done a photo shoot with Star Wars characters, and they were very nice. Fortunately, they didn't have any tantrums.
Who was in the Mandalorian armor? Do you know? Can you say? Was it Grogu?
It was Han Solo.
There you go. This is very, very exciting indeed. Yes, we have shot on the cover The Mandalorian, played, of course, in the film by Pedro Pascal. If you don't know what this is a film. It's a film continuation, I guess, of The Mandalorian show, the Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni created Mandalorian show, which has been huge on Disney Plus over the last few years. Mando, he's, of course, a Mandalorian bounty hunter. Din Djarin is his name, and he has a little ward, little Grogu, little
there
baby Yoda. So adorable, so delightful. And now Jon Favreau, Favs himself, is directing this movie. It's coming to the big screen. It's going to be the first Star Wars movie in 7 years. And more, of course, if you ignore the existence of The Rise of Skywalker. And this is exciting. It's coming out in May. And we got Ben Travis to write this feature, didn't we, Nick?
We did. Our very own Grogu, full of innocence and joy, and
but he'll fuck you up.
He will.
He'll
vomit on you. He'll eat.
He'll steal your macaroons.
Space spiders. He'll take your macaroons. Is it macaroons or macarons?
I think it's macaroons, but it might be.
I feel like we had a big conversation.
It's spelt macaron, but I've always pronounced it macaroon
during the making of this issue. But yeah, no, Ben did the thing. But yeah, we should talk about the shoot before we dive into the mysteries of the cover story, because this was very exciting. This was like a big old, huge production. Took us about 6 months to put together. We had the idea. We've done Mando and Grogu on the cover a whole lot. How do you do something different? And we thought, why not try and shoot them? And so we kind of came up with the conceit of them behind the scenes on a soundstage making their movie in Hollywood. And we proposed that to Disney and Lucasfilm. And there were many, many calls and conversations. And it's obviously a very complex business. Many macarons to buy for Grogu.
Many macarons died.
Yes, they all
to bring us this cover shoot.
But yeah, it was really special. I couldn't be there myself. I really wish I had been, because I would have loved to got a selfie with Grogu. But
indeed, Mando. You know, hey Pedro, take off the helmet. Pedro, hello. Yeah. And he runs away.
Yeah, there he goes.
He wants to preserve the mystery.
There he goes. But we got Grogu just before he headed off to the Oscars. He can't clap, but he can pose, and we got great shots. And in fact, our subscriber cover this month is Grogu holding a clapperboard, looking pretty adorable.
That is so exciting.
Love that image.
Oh, that's amazing. And inside, Nick, in the feature itself, Ben has spoken to many, many wonderful people. Who's he spoken to?
He's spoken to Pedro Pascal.
Yep.
Spoken to Jon Favreau.
Yep.
Spoken to Dave Filoni.
Yep.
He has spoken to Jeremy Allen White.
What?
Who is playing Rotter the Hutt, a character that we're all obsessed with. This is a swole slug. imagine Jabba the Hutt if he had gym membership and was just eating protein bars and flexing. I mean, it's quite something.
Jim Bro Jabba. Yeah, he's related to Jabba the Hutt, isn't
he? He's Jabba's son.
He's
Jabba's son. Well, helpfully, we have an article that breaks down all the various huts. So how many huts can you name? Jabba's the easy
and Rotter,
one.
That's pretty much it.
Rotter the Hutlet.
Yeah.
There's also Zero.
Yeah.
And the twins, whose names I can't find, but they were in the Book of Boba Fett.
Being carried around on some kind of
platform. So, yeah, there is Jeremy Allen White, the star of The Bear, very serious thespian actor man, is playing a slug.
He's playing a slug. And we know more about this movie now. We know a little bit more about the story. It's all in here. It's a great feature written by Ben, who's a big Star Wars fan and a big Mandalorian fan, and he loves Grogu more than life itself.
Yeah,
and
it's a great read.
His opening line is, "It was the soup that did it." So there
you go.
That's
a cliffhanger.
I want to know more.
You've got to know more. Our next cover story also has soup involved in it. So maybe this is like a...
What?
We'll reveal all in a month's time. But yeah, there is a portion of soup involved in our next cover story, which is quite a tease. Ben also talked to Sigourney Weaver, we should say.
Yes.
Who is making her Star Wars debut.
Yes.
Obviously the queen of sci-fi. She's done Alien. She's done Avatar. And now she's in Star Wars as Admiral Ward.
She's ticked them all off. It's amazing.
Colonel Ward.
Oh, God.
Misinformation. Or promotion. which is higher, a colonel or an admiral?
I'm saying an admiral. Admiral's probably be higher than a colonel, I'm guessing.
Sorry, Sigourney.
Yeah.
Maybe in the next film.
I might be completely wrong about that, but I think that's the case. So that's exciting. Hey, Nick. So this week we have endeavored to take listener questions. We've been promising it / threatening it since the shameless plug began over a year ago. So we're going to race through the issue a little bit faster than we normally do. We're not going to talk about every feature. We're not going to talk about every page of my section, even though they are all perfection. But what I do want to talk about is something that I think is very, very old school Empire. And that is a sidebar in the Mandalorian piece where John Nugent spends 24 hours dressed up as a Mandalorian. Well, I say dressed up as a Mandalorian. He got a helmet off the internet and put it on over his normal face and wore his normal clothes and went about his business. And this is a very old school Empire thing.
Yeah, this is very much the Timu version of the Mandalorian and Grogu, because we also got a cuddly Grogu plushie, which John spent a day with. But yeah, this is a lot of dreams came true this issue. We got to shoot Star Wars characters for the first time, and we also got to shoot John Nugent in the bath, which is something we've been trying for.
And you insisted on doing this yourself, didn't you?
I had to get the shots just right. But yeah, this is a big month for the John Nugent fans. What are the fan community called? Are they new gents? Are they nugers? But they're going to be very pleased because John, one of the shots is of John in the bath with his Mando helmet on. It's very tastefully done. John was fully up for it.
John's in the bath with his helmet out, and we've printed it.
Yeah, I remember when we made John Hitchcock's go around London painted blue for the first Avatar. And
That was the first. I thought he was just doing it.
It just happened. He painted himself blue, so it worked out well. But yeah, and we did the Bondathon where we spent 45 hours in tuxedos.
Yeah,
that one wasn't so bad.
Yeah,
actually, in some ways, it was the worst of all.
It was awful
because we didn't sleep for the 3 days, and we had to watch 14 hours straight of Roger Moore Bond movies.
Roger Moore.
Moonraker almost broke me. But it's a bit of old school silliness. And so that is really funny. The headline for that is, "This is not the way."
Yes. It's very good. So well done, everybody involved with that. We're going to race through the feature section now. We're going to say very, very quickly what the features are. And Nick's going to give you a very, very quick fact and story about each of the features.
A story? Okay.
Or just a fact, or your opinion, whatever you want to do. But we've got to get to the listener questions. We've been promising it for over a year, so we should deliver. So the next feature is about the thriller Apex, which sees Charlize Theron and Taron Egerton battle each other in an unforgiving Australian landscape. This is written by the great Anthony Breshnikin. This is Empire debut, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But yeah, he's a great writer, so we're very happy to have him working for us. And yeah, he spoke to Charlize Theron and Taron Egerton and the director, Baltazar Kormáka.
That's correct, yes.
Who did Everest. And I spent an amazing day on the set of Everest at Pinewood, where they were simulating snow with mashed potato, I believe.
You see, the stories don't have to be about the film we're talking about.
There we go.
That's good. You delivered a good story.
And I was meant to go up into the Dolomites where they were filming. They decided that wasn't safe for me. So instead I went to Pinewood, where I proceeded to bang my head on a pipe and I had to be seen by a medic. So
that's amazing.
You can't take me anywhere. But yes, no, this is a really great read.
Someone else who used to work for the magazine, I won't say who it was, but also had to be tended to medically on a set once after tripping over a wire.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, also on Rock of Ages, one of our writers was slipped, I believe, in some water and was tended to by Tom Cruise's mum.
Really?
Yep.
Blimey.
That's an incredible.
I wonder if it's the same person. Maybe our stories have been conflated.
It's possible.
Maybe we only have
the wire
stories
involved.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is a great read. And Taron Egerton, I'm really intrigued to see this because Taron Egerton, he's playing this sort of creepy serial killer villain. And it sounds like he's very golem-y. A golem-y fellow. And I'm excited to see what he does after reading this. But yeah, it's a really good read. And I think these are the first interviews on this film. Looking forward to it.
Exciting indeed. It's going to be on Netflix, I believe. Netflix Apex.
Yep.
Yeah, good. Next up is an oral history of Stand By Me. Obviously, Rob Reiner died just a couple of months ago. The movie is also 40 years old.
Yeah.
So I imagine these things were in your thoughts when you decided to do this.
Yeah, we were talking about Rob Reiner and how we could, you know, pay proper tribute to him. And yeah, the anniversary of this film was coming up. So we spoke to a lot of people. They were all really eager to talk about the film. They all loved the film. They had an amazing time making it. A lot of them were very young, the cast, obviously. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they all had, you know, really warm memories of Rob Reiner. So it's a really lovely read. We spoke to, well, so many people. Jerry O'Connell, Will Wheaton, John Cusack,
Corey Feldman,
the casting director, the two writers. And it's a really, really lovely read.
By Jamie Graham.
Who
I think is the world's leading authority on Stand By Me. It is his favorite film. He's seen it over 100 times. He's written about it many, many times, including for a former rival publication. But this, I think he is, maybe this is his masterpiece because he's never done this format before and he's never had these conversations with these people before to this depth. So
yeah, it's beautiful.
Wonderful stuff.
It's a really, really lovely read from Jamie.
Yeah, I'm not even doing the opening lines on this one. It's such a great piece. Speaking of people writing for us for the first time, Nick, we have another feature on the film Rose of Nevada, and this is a piece written for us by the film's director, the unique British director Mark Jenkin.
Yeah, the guy behind Bait and Ennis Main, and now Rose of Nevada, which is a really special film. It's kind of about a ghost ship, but it's really undefinable, and he makes these amazing films set in Cornwall. He's a really singular filmmaker. And you know, it's like, I just like having this piece in a Star Wars issue, you know, that you can really mix it up. And so it's a very, as far from Star Wars as you can get, really. It's this very independent, interesting singular film, but he's written a great piece for us, Mark, about putting it together. And he said writing this was harder than writing the script.
Really?
Which,
okay.
So he put a lot of energy and effort into it. So thank you for that, Mark. And it's a great read. And he even name checks Quantum Leap and reveals that he bought a Quantum Leap box set while making this film.
So, yikes.
Why didn't he have it already?
Yeah. Come on, Mark. What are you doing? Next feature is one I wrote. It is a piece about Ben Wheatley's Rogues Gallery. Ben Wheatley's got a new movie coming out in April. It's called Normal. Yes, he had a movie coming out last week as well called Bulk.
But
this is Bob Odenkirk as a small town sheriff who goes toe-to-toe with a lot of psychotic killer type people. And so we had the capital idea that Ben Wheatley's had a lot of colorful killers in his movies, so we decided to talk to the great man about those people. And that is what I did.
The Meg is one of them, is included, is a psycho. I remember distinctly us coming up with this feature idea. It was you, myself, and Alex Godfrey, our features editor, and we were walking back from a screening through North Central London, and spitballing this idea. So it's cool to see it on the page.
I think this actually will tie in very nicely to a question we have coming up later on. So I'm not going to say too much else about it. But Ben was wonderful. He gave me a lot of time, which was very, very nice of him. The opening line is, Ben Wheatley has killed a lot of people. And it's initially, by the way, real quick, the headline for this is Killer List. Killer List. But we dubbed it unofficially Wheatley's Wrong'uns.
Yeah, it was referred to as Wheatley's Wrong'uns.
Yes. The problem with that was
Ben's
that...
Ben's baddies.
Ben's baddies, Wheatley's Wrong'uns. The problem with that is that Ulysses Richardson, who is the Bob Odenkirk character in Normal, is not a wrong'un. He's a hero. Right. So we had to change that name in the end.
Ben's Bad Boys. Anyway, let's let it go. It's been printed. It's too late. It's too late to change it. Killer List is very good.
Yes, it is. Hey, this is a great... The next feature is a fantastic opening spread. Really catches your attention. It says simply flame on, and the flame on is a fire. Why is that, Nick? Why is that?
Because, my friend, we have done a feature on fire in the movies. And this was a pitch that came out of nowhere. A guy called Craig Barboza. Emailed us
from the Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Yes, yeah, there was a lot of rum involved in his pitch.
You best start believing in features about fire, Mr. Dissemblian. You're about to edit one.
Oh my gosh, that was exactly what he said. Word for word, with that voice.
And, really?
Yeah, no. Craig emailed us and just pitched this idea, and it was so original. And he was going to a fire workshop in New York where a load of stunt people get together and set themselves on fire. And this may be the first feature in Empire history where the writer sets himself on fire.
No, I did it for the Ben Wheatley feature.
Okay.
I was on fire.
It's
all
not
the way
even the only one in the issue. But Craig, there is a photo at the front of the magazine of Craig setting his arm on fire. And I hope you put it out. although he was on fire writing this piece because it's fantastic.
It's a really fantastic piece.
It's really great. It talks about, he interviews all kinds of stunt coordinators and fire experts about, you know, the scene with the flamethrower and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Seen the flamethrower battle in Ballerina, and gets into, you know, the fact that they still do this stuff practically.
Yeah.
Other times people do it digitally, but, you know, are we still going to be doing practical fire stunts, or is that age coming to an end? So it's really, really interesting.
I hope so, because, you know, CG fire, there's something about it that just doesn't quite work for me. So, for example, recently Chris Hemsworth for Extraction, there's a scene where his character, Tyler Rake, has his arm set alight, and they did it for real. They set Chris Hemsworth's arm alight.
Yeah, Mission Impossible Final Reckoning, Tom Cruise jumped out of that plane and set himself on fire, set the parachute on fire.
Yeah,
yeah, that was real. And so that people are still doing it. So it's a really, really interesting read, and it's something you probably haven't thought about too much, but it's a really cool deep dive into
fire. Fantastic. That's the feature section done. We're going to race through, and I mean race through, but with obviously the all due respect to the other sections, which are Beth Webb's section, which is the first word section, the news section, and there's lots of great stuff inside the issue. We have the first look at the Nick Cage live action Spider-Verse spin-off.
Very excited.
Spider-Noir, which is great. We have a look at the sequel to The Handmaid's Tale called The Testaments. We have an interview with Brian Cox, who's about to make his directorial debut.
No, he wrote a piece for us.
He wrote a piece for us.
There was less swearing than I expected, but, you know, from Succession. But no, it's a really sweet piece. He's directed his first movie. We've got Craig Mazin explaining why he has made a film about talking sheep.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Which is The Sheep Detectives.
Yeah.
Yes.
We did a spotlight. We did a photo shoot with the two stars of California Scheming, James McAvoy's new film, Samuel Bottomley and Seamus MacLean Ross.
Yes.
And that's really cool. And Sparky, we spoke to Chase Infinity. And we, in a lovely bit of corporate synergy, spoke to our brother magazine, Mojo, about the Beatles movie. And we have Danny Eccleston,
wow,
one of the world's leading Beatles experts, talking us through. And it was incredible, like, how much information he could glean from just looking at the four images that have come out from the Sam Mendes Beatles movies.
There's a feedback loop.
Yeah.
Don't make me interview Pilot TV, otherwise...
Yeah, it's coming.
Oh, my God.
It's coming for you.
My overwhelming contempt will be made clear. Bill Skarsgård on a roll. He talks about his role in Gus Van Sant's very good new crime thriller, Dead Man's Wire, which is out, Nick, already. Came out last week, so that's good. And I spoke to Judd Apatow about Mel Brooks, because he's got a great new documentary about Mel Brooks.
I really want to see that.
Which is really, really terrific.
I really want to see that.
Worth 4 hours of your time.
What I don't want to see is anything involving the Soviet Mickey Mouse, Cheburashka, which we have done a piece on. I had never heard of this, and it's, imagine Mickey Mouse, but just wrong.
It'll haunt your dreams.
I call him Mucky Mouse. But yeah, it's he is massive in Russia. And so we investigate that, and there's loads of other stuff. It's a great session.
Yes, Sazie Beetz, who is the star of Label Kill You, which is out in cinemas next week, so after this is out, is the subject of this month's Pint of Milk.
If you were wondering what Zazie Beetz would like to have on her gravestone, wonder no longer.
Yes.
Buy this issue.
And find out.
It will be revealed.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, my section, the best section, John's section, the review section is always very good. It's got lots of great stuff inside there. All the reviews you could possibly wish to read and some that you don't. And my section, Final Cut, is just, it's just wall-to-wall bangers once again. Starts off with an interview, Q&A with Dan Trachtenberg, who is the Prince of Predator. And Predator Badlands is now on Disney Plus and Shiny Disc, and it's great. And I had a lovely chat with Dan Trachtenberg about directing the Predator franchise. We have a spoiler special on Wonder Man. Mike Lee talked to Jamie Graham about Life is Sweet, which is a brilliant film that Mike Lee doesn't really rate that highly. We rank Robert Zemeckis' movies. You will never guess what number one is, but you might not guess what number eight is. I did a time capsule with Joe Carnahan talking about his movies, and this month's quiz is Jennifer Lawrence. Would you like a sample question, Nick?
Yes, please.
What is the name of Lawrence's character in Darren Aronofsky's Mother?
She doesn't have one.
She is called simply Mother.
Oh, that was going to be my guess, and I didn't.
There you go.
Come on, man.
Amazing, amazing issue.
If you're a
fan of Stand By Me, The Beatles, Charlize Theron, Dan Trachtenberg, Nick, John in the Bath, all of these things.
Pick
it up.
Yeah, it's got Star Wars and Predator, but it's also got Mark Jenkins and Mike Lee. So
multitudes.
Do you think Mike Lee watches Mandalorian and Grogu?
I think he's going to just Mike Lee listen to this. It's unlikely.
I would watch Mike Lee and Grogu if that was a TV show.
I remember seeing once at Cannes years and years ago, Mike Lee was at the premiere of The Fifth Element, which was at Cannes, and he came out and he was interviewed afterwards. And he was actually quite positive.
By mistake.
He was very positive about it. He was like, oh, it was really, really inventive. And they had a gag. I remember this. They had a gag where the filters are longer than the actual cigarette bit.
Mm.
And that really tickled him for some reason.
Amazing.
I just love the idea of Mike Lee watching, Lilo Dallas Multipass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a fun one. But there you go. The brand new issue is on sale right now. It is the May 2026 issue. You have just about 13 more days to go pick this up from Good, Evil, or Virtual News Agents. It is issue 452. It is an absolute belter. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into this. And of course, also John Nugent's helmet. Nick, we've been promising people that we would answer listener questions about how this so-called magazine is put together, and the questions have come in their, well, I'll be honest,
single digits.
Yeah. No,
we have one question.
I've asked several times for questions and I lost them all.
Yeah.
So I decided to ask instead on the Empire subreddit. So these people's names are not the real names. Fluffy Attention 7425 asks, how do you decide who gets to write which segment? Also wanted to thank you for the beautiful Stand By Me segment. It's one of my dad's childhood favorites, and he thought it was a beautiful read.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you, Fluffy, and to your dad.
You had my fluffy curiosity. Now you have my fluffy attention.
Papa Fluffy. It's an arm wrestling contest. It's like that Stallone movie. We wrestle.
We wrestle nude, covered in Swarovski.
Yeah, no, it's there's no one answer to this, really. I mean, it could be that somebody is particularly passionate about a film series. It could be that, you know, there's a writer that we want to try out, that we're excited about, like, you know, Anthony Breznikin, that we want to bring in on something. Generally, it's just, I guess the main answer is passion. You know, if someone is really into something, you want that passion. So if someone is a big Christopher Nolan fan, you know, that makes sense that they would do that. You wouldn't send someone who doesn't enjoy his films. There is no real sophisticated answer to this. We also like to rotate it, though. We like to keep it fresh. So, you know, I've done quite a lot of articles on Jurassic Park and Jurassic World. So I kind of wanted to take a break from it and let someone else come in with like a fresh perspective on it all. Mm. The last one.
Mm.
What are your thoughts? Mm. You commission people.
Rarely.
You mostly write it yourself. Yourself.
I write a lot of my section myself. My thought, yeah, I think there are definitely times where something comes in and I think I'm not particularly well placed to do that, or I'm not well suited to do that. There's someone who's going to be better qualified than me to write that piece. The Mike Leigh one, for example, I really like Life is Sweet. And I've interviewed Mike Leigh before. I've done an oral history podcast with him and David Hewlett and the cast and crew of Naked, which, you know, is one of my proudest achievements on this podcast. So I'm not afraid of Mike Leigh. What are you implying? Are you implying I'm afraid of Mike Leigh? I'm not afraid of Mike Leigh. I'll take Mike Leigh in a fight.
I'll wrestle Mike. Sometimes it's tone as well, right? Like, different writers have different tones, and some lean into humor a little bit more, and some subject matter is more appropriate to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it's just a case of, oh, I bet so-and-so would write a really entertaining thing on that. And sometimes you want to match someone up with something that's could be a little dry and a little starchy, and you want to diffuse that a little bit by putting someone onto it who has a bit more of an accessible tone.
Yeah, with the Life is Sweet thing, I was thinking, you know, you need someone who's got a lot of movie knowledge, and we obviously have a lot of people like that, but some people have specialist areas and some people don't. Jamie Graham's a great all-rounder, so I thought immediately of Jamie Graham, and he was a really, really good fit for that. In terms of some other stuff going, I don't know. For me, it's really interesting that you did step aside from the Jurassic World Rebirth one, and I can kind of see why. Because sometimes when you're writing about the same subject over again, I write a lot of Marvel stuff. And sometimes, you know, I guess it could be a little bit tricky to go back to the well again and again and again. But then the subject matter is so varied. But with Jurassic Park, it's the same thing every single time, right? So I don't know. But
it's what I love about writing about film is that every film is different. So, you know, one thing you're commissioned to do could be about set in space. And so you end up researching space travel and learning a lot about that. And then the next thing you do is based on ancient history.
Yeah.
And so you're constantly writing about completely different things and learning different things. And so that's one of the things I like to do, is do something completely different each time, rather than just, you know, write about dinosaurs every single time. I think it's nice to broaden it out.
I mean, there's a comfort zone's a big thing. We've discussed this an awful lot on the podcast. And sometimes when you're taken out of your comfort zone and you're writing about maybe a filmmaker you're not that au fait with, or a subject that you're not that in love with, it can lead to really, really interesting work. Sometimes it can read like a feature from a person who's out of their comfort zone. And then conversely, if you're in your comfort zone, sometimes you can deliver a tired piece of work. But then also conversely, you could be really, really comfortable with the subject, be an expert in the subject, and deliver a really, really fun feature. So there's no right answer or wrong answer to anything. Yeah. Every feature, everything I commission, every podcast we do is weighed up on its own merits. Certainly when I'm doing podcasts, I know this question's not about podcasts, but when we're doing spoiler specials, I do want to bring in people who are kind of experts in their field.
Yeah, so it's balancing that. But I also think most writers are open to doing pretty much anything and want to be stretched and want to do things and
especially
learn about stuff.
Yeah, especially also we should say freelance writers who get paid for this stuff. Staff writers like, okay, maybe I don't want to do that.
But in terms of commissioning, I mean, there are relationships as well. Yeah. That's another thing to mention is with Steven Spielberg, Ian Freer has been doing the Steven Spielberg interviews for Empire for as long as I can remember, and for a good reason, because he is so passionate and so well-informed and just knows his stuff inside out and has that relationship. Spielberg knows him and puts him at ease. And, you know, he's literally written the book.
Yeah. I mean, look at this month's issue, right? The Ben Wheatley feature. So I've known Ben for years. So it felt like that was a good fit for me to do that, to talk to Ben Wheatley again. All right, let's move on. This is a weird one. Chili first says, can you do a retro shameless plug on the using all of the Jack Reacher book titles gag for that early article on the first Cruise movie? Was it the first Cruise movie? I think it was the second Cruise movie. It was the second Cruise movie.
Right. I remember this happening, and I remember there being a discussion of should we stop him? Can we stop him? Do you want to explain what you did?
Yeah, this is me. I wrote the feature for Jack Reacher Never Go Back. And as I was writing the feature, I decided it would be a capital idea. Maybe this is to challenge myself because I was in my comfort zone. I thought it would be a hilarious thing to smuggle the titles of every single Jack Reacher novel into the piece, which meant that I really had to work hard with things like Echo Burning. But they were in there, and then this was noticed, and the powers that be at the time were on the verge of jettisoning it, and I protested in the strongest possible terms.
Yeah, I think some kind of siren went off, and the five families were gathered, and it was there was a discussion at the time, definitely, of like, you know, because I think I admire your playfulness when it comes to writing. Like, I think, like, more than probably anyone else I know, you like to push things and be playful and experiment. Sometimes, the occasional time, it goes too far.
Fuck you.
But most times, it's to be lauded. And
I take back the fuck you.
I think it was great. Look, the fact that somebody is still bringing it up all these years on, frankly, the only memorable thing to come out of Jack Reacher Never Go Back, let's be honest.
I was insanely proud of it. I was really proud of it. Yeah. And I was like, please don't cut this. Please don't cut this. I remember once as well, I wrote a really, really daft joke because I put a lot of daft jokes in my features. And I put a really daft joke in the Jason Bourne feature. And I remember including, like, when I sent it in, I went, there's a really daft joke. It's intentional. Please do not cut it. Because once I send it in, it's out of my hands, you know. So I've no guarantees that stuff I've written will actually make it to press. But I was really proud. Thank you, Jill. First,
there have been some high concept. I'm sure at some point there was a one take film, like a film with one single shot.
Yeah.
That you talked about. You
were going to write sentence,
it as one sentence.
Yeah.
And you haven't done that.
No, I haven't done that.
Have you tried to do it and it's been stopped?
No, I was really disappointed when Dan reviewed 1917 and it wasn't in one sentence.
Yeah.
But it's really tricky.
I did a David Lynch feature once that ran backwards, and that was a bad,
yes,
that
you
was
did.
A, that was a bad idea. I mean, that was a harrowing week I spent watching all of David Lynch's films and then writing about them backwards because I had the flu at the time and I didn't feel well and it didn't help.
I love stuff like that.
It's like,
this shit's meant to be fun. At the end of the day, like, we're meant to be writing features that are informative and educational, but they're also meant to be fun and they're meant to be injected with your personality and your sense of humor. And that is what I did with that feature. Here is one from username suggestion 44. How far in advance are you planning the event style features? Are you taking your cue from PR contacts for who will be available? And do you prioritize hire when you'll have a spoiler special or podcast interview tie-in? I think we can take the last part first. No, we do not.
What was the question there?
Do you prioritize hire when you'll have a spoiler special or podcast interview tie-in? So, you know, do you maybe, you'll say, okay, that's going to be a feature because that's going to be something that we'll have a spoiler special on.
No,
we don't.
No, because if it's major enough, a film or TV show to get a spoiler special, we would be considering it for a feature anyway.
Like, and then sometimes there'll be things that get spoiler specials that don't even get a feature, you know, like something like
Sometimes we build it up as a package though. Like we will have in those very early conversations say we'd like to do this, but we also would like to do an event, we would like to do a podcast.
Yes.
In terms of planning ahead, more than ever, we're planning a long way ahead. Obviously, yeah, when I became editor, the pandemic happened like 2 months in.
You started the pandemic, didn't you?
I accidentally started it.
Yeah.
We had all these plans, we built up all these plans, and they all got swept aside. And so we had to spend, you know, that year and a half or whatever it was, improvising and coming up with stuff out of nowhere. So that was tough. But now things have gone back to normal. We are able to plan a long way ahead and we have stuff we're thinking about for next year already, 2027.
Yeah. But again, conversely, to use that word, we have another question from CookieAd9018 who says,
names are amazing.
What would be the furthest in advance feature you've had? So you're planning stuff a year and a half in advance. And conversely, they use the word as well, the shortest notice. So have we ever had to pull features out of our arse at the 11th hour?
Oh yeah, routinely. Like we have, stuff has dropped out. I don't know about in press week. I mean, I remember the days where you were doing the news section and you would be writing stuff on press day.
Yeah.
Which gives me palpitations thinking about that now, because I think we're more of a well-oiled machine.
The structure has changed so much.
No, but stuff happens for sure. I mean, we're reacting to what's happening in Hollywood. So if we have a week left and, you know, Carrie Fisher dying, I remember that being something. We had almost finished the issue and we broke for Christmas and Carrie Fisher sadly passed away. And I think it was like 20 something pages that we made so quickly.
Yeah.
And we ended up, you know, Dan Aykroyd wrote us a piece about Carrie Fisher and we did all these tributes. And I mean, it was incredible team effort by everyone to react so fast. But yeah, that does happen.
There's a feature in this issue that was pulled together with about 5 days to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the flat plan is always changing as we go. You know, we have about 3.5 weeks to do an issue and we start off with a flat plan. Stuff falls through all the time.
All the time.
A lot of stuff is out of our control. You know, an actor will change their mind or an actor will get ill and they're not able to do an interview, or, you know, a film will be delayed, like happened.
Or pushed back or something like that, or pictures won't be available.
Well, when the pandemic happened, like we lost everything in our issue. It just went, all the interviews got cancelled, all the screenings got cancelled, we lost our cover, like it was horrific.
I mean, even recently, I don't want to name names, but there was something I did recently. It was meant to be a feature, and then pictures weren't available. Enough pictures weren't available to make it a feature. So I'm not going to say downgraded, because that implies that other sections are not as important as features. Everything's important, but it was downgraded.
Yeah,
but we get
that all the time, you know. And part of the job is dealing with bad news, and you get your hopes up, and then something gets cancelled. We had a cover last year, a massive film, and it got cancelled with very little notice and out of nowhere, and just was like, ah.
Some of those pivots
We ended up doing Jaws instead, and Jaws was our biggest issue of last year. It sold more copies than any of the big films we put on, and we really learned something from that, and that's why we ended up doing Lord of the Rings, which has also been a really big issue for us.
Yep.
And actually, talking of how long have we spent planning an issue, that Lord of the Rings issue, we did the photo shoot for the cover back in the summer last year. I think it was August, maybe July. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to get Peter Jackson, to get Kate Blanchett and Liv Tyler together, to get Viggo and Sean together, to get, you know, all of that stuff that we got, that took like 8 months.
I genuinely have no idea how your hair is that color. If I did what you do, I'd be breathing deeply
because there is drama almost every day. But it's all worth it, because when you get a yes on something, you've thrown some mad idea into the ether, and you get a yes from whoever it is. And so every month is super exciting and full of joy and like amazement that we're able to get these amazing exclusives. But then you are also on the flip side dealing with a lot of no's and rejection, and that's just part of it. You just have to keep going.
For King Ace, I think that's meant to be a plan fucking. What has been the most stressful issue to get out the door? Have you ever come close to missing the print deadline? Have we? I'm sure I've skirted close to the edge a couple of times.
I know I have an answer for this.
What the most stressful issue?
I'm not going to say what it was.
How recent was it?
It was, I think, 2 years ago. Maybe 3 years ago. It was on press day, and our press deadlines are like in stone. And if you miss your press deadline, which we've never done, to my knowledge, then it costs an insane amount of money. Like you can get, for every day you extend it by, it's insane money. So we have never done it. But I remember there was the one issue where we had no cover for... I want to tell the story properly, but I can't.
Oh, is this the one where I was on the cover?
No, this was not the one where you were on the cover, but what I will say, I can't say what it was.
You're being so vague, even I don't know what you're talking about. Mime it. What do you want?
No, because then you're going to say it.
You just air dicked. Why did you air dick? You're air dicking. What are you doing?
So we had no cover, and there were multiple covers, and we had no art. And I remember lying down on the ground, and I think Chris Lupton, our creative director, also like got on the floor because we were so stressed out. It was insane, and again, like it's completely out of our control. You're waiting for people to provide you with the stuff, and we were doing a split run. It was a big issue. And I remember we found a bit of clip art that we at the last minute that if all had gone wrong, we were going to have to put a bit of clip art on the cover. And it was we got it like just in time. But it was the latest that we've ever had to go.
I don't think I know this story.
Yeah. I remember Comic-Con was stressful as well. You and I went to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
In what year was that?
Yeah, their last one was 2017.
Just the way that the deadlines matched up. Like Comic-Con happened just before we went to press. And I remember you and I were in San Diego, and everyone thinks like Comic-Con is like all fun and you go there and it's like having the time of your life. It was incredibly stressful because we did 3 days of interviews.
Yeah.
Basically didn't sleep.
Yeah.
And then we had to transcribe it all, and you and I had to write like 20 pages of the magazine.
And we were staying in a shit box.
We were so tired. We were in this terrible hotel, and all the good ones had been booked up. And I just remember that Sunday where we wrote it all was one of the worst days of my life. I was so tired.
We were half an hour away from the convention center. We were on the other side of San Diego. And I remember that distinctly as well, because this was back in the days. Like, I don't like AI, but I have said on the podcast, I use Otter to transcribe. And it has changed my life. It's a game changer because back in the heady days of 2017, we had to transcribe all that shit ourselves. And the rule of thumb tends to be that it would take twice as long to transcribe as the interview is. So if you do a half hour interview, it takes an hour. And if you have 10 of those, then you could do the maths.
So this was back in the day where you had a blank Word document and you had to literally listen to the audio and type it all out. Like nowadays, Otter AI, and then I put it into otranscribe.com.
It's also Mac Whisperer. There are other things available.
Good shit. And that was a bad time.
It cuts down the time so, so much. And I justify it to myself because I'm not costing anyone a job. I'm saving myself time as a job I used to do for myself. And so I'm saving myself.
Although Otter AI is slightly creepy in that it analyzes your interview and then gives you like a kind of review of your interview and sometimes tells you where you should have asked like a follow-up.
Oh, I just ignore that shit. I go straight to the...
It goes, the interviewer was trying to get this line, but the person dodged it. And you're like, oh, great. Okay. You don't need you to point out my shortcomings.
It does that.
Yeah, I don't like it.
In terms of print deadlines, back in the day when I first joined Empire, and for many, many, many years afterwards, we had a culture where it was basically you would put everything off until the last week, and then the magazine would basically be put together in the last week, and sometimes in the last couple of days, and sometimes in the last day. And that was the culture.
It used to be more brutal. Yeah, I was much more brutal. I was sub-editor, and Liz, our great production editor, still at Empire, and we would routinely be at the office till like 2 or 3 a.m.
Not even that. Like sometimes it'd be 3 or 4, 4 a.m. and we'd all, you know, we'd all get loads of pizzas from Domino's and we would just sit there and you'd be reading pages. And I remember the first time I came back after I'd gone away and I'd worked in LA for a while as the magazine's West Coast editor, which is a bullshit title, but hey, I'm executive editor now. So what the fuck does that mean either? And then you come back. I came back and I was the news editor again. And it was a bit of culture shock. I don't know, whatever it was, but I went into that press day. It's exactly what you said earlier on, with some stuff not written, and I was writing the pages as they were being designed at like midnight on the night that they were meant to go. I had all the material, I just hadn't written them yet. And again, I'm not going to name names, but then another editor came in eventually and completely transformed the culture and approach at the magazine. And now I tend to be done in my section 2 weeks before we finish, and press day. I mean, it's press day now.
Yeah, I know we're mere days from finishing the magazine, and the fact we can sit here and chat wouldn't have happened back in the day. But
would not have happened.
And no, I mean, it's just the team.
It's just the way magazines are done,
and it's a great team. I mean, Beth, Alex, you, everyone is like super good with deadlines, and you know, we're dealing with chaos and unpredictability because that's just the movie industry, and you know, you're dealing with stuff changing all the time, but you know, it's,
and it wasn't just an Empire thing. This was just how magazines were made back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm very glad that it's changed now. Even though, you know, I now and again I think, oh, I had a soft spot for those days when we were like up to 2 and 3 in the morning eating pizzas and putting the magazine together.
We'd be dead.
But now I would be dead.
But yes, no, I haven't had a day where I've had to, a press day where I've had to lie down on the ground for a few years, and long may that continue.
Listen, I don't think we're going to be able to do all the questions that people have sent in. They have sent in quite a few, and also some questions that come through from our Discord channel. But maybe we can do this again next month. So we'll, you know, keep sending them in. But we're going to take one more. We're going to take one from our Discord channel right now. And then we're going to take some more next month, because I've quite enjoyed this. It's been quite fun.
Yeah.
Figo, the sorrow of Moldavia.
Oh, I already like this guy.
How many different issues are you working on at once? How do you decide what articles make it in and what don't?
Love the Ghostbusters 2 reference. We should do a Ghostbusters 2 cover. Why not? In terms of how many, in terms of how many we're working on, we are, a lot. To be honest, because we are sort of thinking at least a year ahead, but there are conversations being had about stuff that's not coming out until, in some cases, 2028.
Yes.
So, you know, often with these big blockbusters or TV shows, they are filming way in advance of when they're actually coming out. So you need to make sure that you can get on set. You know, you want to start banking all that material. If you leave it too late, yeah, I mean, in our experience, the longer you work on something, the better the results. So you want to get in there and have those conversations early. So, I want to say there isn't an exact number. Maybe, let's say 12. Let's say we're working on 12 issues.
Yeah, but really you're working on like substantially you're working on two at any given time. And sometimes as we get closer to Christmas three.
Yeah. Mainly it's covers, but we have ideas all the time. I mean, one of the joys of the job is getting together and brainstorming, and ideas come out, and you know, we only have so many retrospective slots a year, so we don't want to do too many like anniversary pitches or whatever, but we have loads of ideas. So we actually have more ideas and we have requests in for stuff that if it happens will be later in the year. But yeah, we're constantly, you know, in conversations about all kinds of things going right to into next year.
Screw it, I'll take another one here. The one on Rory says, when you're attending film festivals, do you like to spend your free time taking in scenery of somewhere like Venice or Sitges? If I'm there, yes. If I'm in Cannes, I don't like to take in the scenery of Venice. It's logistically difficult. I guess we're not really film festival guys anymore, are we, really?
No, I did Cannes a few times early on, but not for a while, and I did Toronto. I have never been to Venice. I've never been to Annecy. I would like to go to the Annecy Animation Festival.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they're listening to this. Maybe they'll invite us.
Please do, because apparently it's really lovely. I talked to the director of the Wild Robot, who was extolling it, and they have all kinds of strange arcane rituals. I think every time there's a rabbit on the screen, everyone shouts something or something like that. people jump into the lake and all this. So I'd like to go there at some point. I have some fond memories, not so much of the scenery, although walking up and down the Croisette is really, really nice, and you get the beachfront.
It is nice, but the key words here, the key phrase here is free time, and the truth is you don't have a lot of it.
Yeah.
These things.
I mean, I was very young when I went to Cannes, and I remember all of you guys got to go to a cocktail party with Steven Spielberg and hang out with him, and I was the one person who didn't get an invite, so I wandered the streets bleakly, and I hung out with a pigeon. Or was it a seagull? Probably a seagull. But I did get to go to a Kung Fu Panda boat party where George Lucas was dancing next to a person in a Kung Fu Panda suit. Although, I don't think he was dancing, probably.
That's amazing.
The panda was dancing.
That's amazing. By the way, I was working that party. That was
that was you in
that
the
was work that we were doing a video blog episode back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you don't get a lot of free time. Film festivals are, like we were saying about Comic-Con, is so intense and full on, and you're running around trying to get to another screening, and it's actually quite, you know, as much as watching films can be considered hard work, it is hard work.
It's an up a dawn, pride swallowing siege that I will never fully tell you about. And the last question from Stig, have you ever started work on a feature, done a lot of the work, and then just scrapped it completely if you feel it's just not working? Yes.
You have.
Yes, it's a short answer to that.
Do you mean scrap it completely or just scrap the draft and start it again? Because generally we have interviews.
I don't think he means scrap it completely and bring something else in. I think he means have you started a second draft or whatever.
Sure. I used to agonize. I used to get writer's block, and I used to have a much harder time for two reasons. One, I never used to actually structure anything before I started. I would just start writing and see what happened, and that has proved to be a bad idea. And two, I do a lot more writing these days because I do book stuff as well. So that has kind of means that you can't afford to. You
can't afford author to Dick DeSimilis says book stuff.
Well, book stuff, ultimately. So yeah, I think if you plan ahead more, which I do these days, then there is less chance of you scrapping it. But yeah, I definitely, when I used to wing it, I'd get halfway through and go, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah. I remember doing that. I remember scrapping, God, I think it might be another Bourne feature. And this is back in the day when I was able to pull all-nighters and I would start very late and I think I'd written the whole thing. And I was just like, this is fucking shit. And I scrapped it and I worked through the night and I wrote another draft. It completely changed my intro. But like the building blocks of your feature,
yeah,
you tend to know what quotes you want to use and stuff.
Yeah, that's something that comes with experience, I think, is I sometimes you don't have to write something for a year, but I know how I'm going to start. I'm not going to say what it is, but I have an image in my head. I went on a set and I saw something and I went, that's the beginning of that's the opener.
Oh.
And you just know straight away from you're seeing someone doing something. You're like, that's amazing. I wish I could scrap stuff retrospectively. I wish I could scrap my Predators feature, which started with the worst fake out I've ever done of like pretending I'm next to a real Predator.
Yeah, we don't like doing that now.
And then I go, oh, it's just an animatronic one.
Yeah.
But I was like trying to make the sound that a Predator makes and do that in text form. And it was Karaw, I think I came up. I just don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, that used to be an old staple of Empire. Oh my God, a lion is rushing towards Empire. Oh my God, our lives are in jeopardy. No, it's just a fake lion.
That's like
we've all done it.
That's like the hoariest like chestnut you can do. So we try and avoid that. There are cliches, and you know, by now we kind of know enough not to repeat them. But we've all done them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would also scrap my George Lucas impersonators on MySpace feature, which hasn't dated well. Written the day after the Bondathon, so you
really?
partially blame that.
Yeah,
for it being absolute shit.
I had to write that Bondathon copy the day of the Bondathon. We were given a generous 4 hours off.
Yeah, didn't you want the headline to be Diarrhea Another Day?
I don't know if I wanted the headline to be in it, but that is in the piece. That is in the piece.
I think there was talk of it being the headline. We ended up with For Sore Eyes Only, which is perfect.
Yeah, Diarrhea Another Day made it in because, listeners, I got the shits towards the end.
Are we really ending this episode with shit?
That is how we're ending it.
A tornado of shit.
This has been a lot of fun, Nick.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed this. The listener questions, keep them coming.
Yeah.
There were some varied ones in there as well that we haven't got to, but we will get to them next time, hopefully. But then I've made the promise before, but we will definitely do another listener question special, Dan.
Yeah.
At some point. If it's not next month, it'll be the month after.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for the questions. And thank you for reading the magazine. If you haven't picked up this issue, please do. We're really proud of it. And we are very excited about our next one. We have done another shoot for the cover, and we have shot something or someone that we are very excited about.
This is exciting.
They're not green or small, but yeah, we are really, really excited about the next one. So
yeah,
we're excited about all of them.
This is exciting.
Got some cool stuff coming. So
I have been in meetings about this issue for the last 4 weeks, and I'm so tired I've forgotten what it is. So I am excited to find out what it is. Oh God, don't do that again. Nick's air dicking again. It's your answer to everything.
It's not air dicking. I'd never heard of that before today.
It's from Ricky Stenicki.
Oh. There is no air dicking on the next cover, I can confirm.
All right, so we're not ending on shit now, we're ending on air dicking. You happy now? All right. This has been another episode of The Shameless Plug. We hope you enjoyed it. And go out, yes, please buy the magazine if you haven't already done so. If you haven't subscribed, you can subscribe online at empireonline.com, and you can join our VIP club, which gets you a magazine subscription, it gets you a podcast supporter special subscription, and it gets you the chance to attend all the incredible events we do as part of the VIP club.
We have one tonight. We have
one tonight.
Ready or Not 2. On Here I Come. And next week we have David Chase. We're going to be watching the finale of The Sopranos with David Chase for the launch of HBO Max. And
that's
then
exciting.
James and I are going to be talking to him.
Anyway, Nick, pleasure as always.
This was the way. Thanks, Chris.
Let's go play Dungeons and Dragons. Thanks for listening. See you next time. That wasn't a joke. That's literally what we're about to do. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing Mountain Dew. So give me my good hands, give me a
grab some friends and an ice-cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew!